Trust Business Lunch on WGNP. Zimmerman is the producer. Hi, this is John Williams. We'll be here until 1 o'clock. We'll continue to keep you posted on the Amy Coney Barrett hearings. They're underway. I was just noticing that Senator Kamala Harris is asking questions, starting out like often they do, not so much asking questions as just saying things like we shouldn't even be here doing this. She is doing it remotely. She is not in the chambers. She is elsewhere, not wearing a mask. Everybody else is. They're spread out. It's a very thin crowd. You're used to seeing those hearing rooms packed. This one is not so, and the nominee has a pink dress on and a black face mask. Everybody around her, everybody in that room has a mask on. Kamala Harris does not because she is elsewhere and doesn't, I guess, have to be wherever she is. So let's talk a little bit about the markets today. Elise Glink joins us here on WGN Radio on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Visit thinkglink.com. This is strange. The NASDAQ is up even more than the Dow. 289 on the Dow, 297 at this instant. Elise on the NASDAQ. How about that?
Yeah, it's. I think there's a lot of anticipation for the top big tech companies, some of which trade on NASDAQ. So, for example, Apple is about to hold what is being termed the most significant iPhone event in years. There's also some concern over whether there will be regulation over some of these large tech companies. Facebook announced this morning that they would no longer allow Holocaust deniers access to the platform, and they would immediately remove or brand content that is contrary to anything that says the Holocaust is an established fact and true. They would remove from the site. So there's a lot of movement in those tech companies, and I think that's probably why NASDAQ is pushing forward so strongly.
When a new version of the iPhone comes out, a lot of times you can tell right away what it is and how it'll change your life, like a much better camera or different apps or different features. But this one, I think, is mostly being sold on the promise of 5G. Are people that unhappy with the, say, download speeds on their phones that 5G is going to be such a deal breaker or maker for them?
You know, I think it goes back to, and I'm not a 5G expert, but when I think about, you know, what our upload and download speeds are, the ability of our phones to capture more of that versus what we would get in, say, our offices, it's really quite a big difference. And as videos get to be shot with, you know, bigger and bigger, you know, the actual file sizes are massive now, right? You're shooting, everybody's got a camera that shoots in 4K. Apple led the way with its last redesign in 2018 with a really sophisticated camera for shooting videos. I think that the concern is that all of this stuff that we're doing just requires more and more data, and so they want to have a faster speed. It almost is looking forward into where we're going, John, rather than our abilities and what we need today.
At thinklink.com, what's scarier than buying a haunted house? Answer that question for me. What are you guys doing there?
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting that 93% of Americans think a home that needs major repairs is a lot scarier than a home that is haunted.
Agreed.
I'm sure you know this just from moving into
the house. I've had one of those, and I agree.
It's interesting. Clever Real Estate did a survey, and next week we can talk about some more of the stuff that's even more Halloween specific, but they asked consumers what it was that was really scary for them. And, you know, this is sort of interesting. Something like 70% of buyers would actually consider buying a haunted house if they could get it for a lower price, and I get that. But 69% fear buying a home that needs mold remediation, because that's just as scary as buying a house that's got a ghost.
Oh, yeah. If you said what are the things that any of us have run into or fear running into, I would say finding mold, asbestos, which is in some houses. And asbestos does not have to be that terrifying, because that can be contained. You can live in a house with asbestos and be safe if it's safely contained. Is asbestos on the list of things people are worried about?
Ding, ding, ding. It's number four, 61%. 61% also fear buying a house with termites, 64% of Americans fear buying a house with foundation issues.
Oh, yeah.
And I think right? So we've all seen enough pictures of sinkholes, like in Florida, California, and other places around the world, just sort of opening up because of drainage issues that are going on sort of beneath the surface. There are some really sort of scary pictures, particularly on the coast when they get those huge mudslides and homes just piling in. And I think foundation issues are big. For us around Lake Michigan, I think a big issue and is probably foundation issues related to the water infiltration. We've got a surfeit of water out in Lake Michigan. It was crazy over the weekend. I don't know if you've got a chance to see any of the waves, but big waves yesterday, and they're beating up against our shoreline, not just in Illinois, but also, of course, in Indiana, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and eating away at the foundations.
Yeah, that's a real issue. Some of those homes are gorgeous. Some of that real estate is prized. And it's a shame, not only for those homeowners, but for the community. I mean, you want to be able to retain those parks or that real estate, for that matter. The other one I don't see on this list is if somebody had lost their life in an unfortunate way, in a strange way, if there was a murder or something else in there. But that one would worry me. Not worry me, but I mean, I wouldn't believe in ghosts. I would have a bad feeling, though, about something that previously happened that was tragic in a house. And then these other things as well. The whole article is at thinkglink.com. What's scarier than buying a haunted one? Got to run, but let's visit again this week. Thank you. Thank you, Elise.
You bet, John.
When we on this radio station, at least on my show, or other stations in town, refer to the debate as the fair tax debate, that's probably us being lazy or sloppy because that's one side's description of it, and the other side very much disagrees with that. It is not called that on the ballot or in official postings by the Secretary of State's office. So let's have a conversation about the graduated income tax amendment. It's time to decide is the title of a presentation. Ed Wehmer, the Wintrust CEO, is going to lead this forum. You can visit lincolnforum.org to find out more. And Ed's going to tell us about that right now. Ed, welcome to the show.
Hey, John, how are you?
Pretty good. Do you agree with my sort of mea culpa there, that if I say, hey, everybody, let's talk about the Fair Tax Amendment, I've already skewed the conversation, haven't I?
Well, you could have, I guess, but in my position with Wintrust being the founder and CEO, Wintrust has to say apolitical on this because certain people want it, certain people don't. We serve everybody, but it's such an important issue facing Illinois. You know, we've got billions of dollars invested in Illinois, and we've got to make sure it comes through and works. So we're trying to have a nice apolitical conversation just to get the facts out so people can decide on their own.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. I hope I do better than Chris Wallace and hope a fly was ahead of my head.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think Chris Wallace is terrific, but he sure did get beat up on that last debate because sometimes you just can't win, right?
So
sometimes the job of a moderator is almost impossible, depending on the behavior of the candidates.
That's a mute button in my hand.
So you're going to have the chairman of Vote Yes for Fairness, so I guess that's somebody who is for it, and then the treasurer of the Coalition for Jobs, Growth, and Prosperity. So what is that person's position on it? They would be against it?
They're against it, yes. They he was former president CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association, president of many business firms before that. And then we have Sue Rezin, who's the Illinois State Senator. She is on the against side, and Dan Bliss on the for side. So we hope to have a reasonable discussion on the pros and cons of this. And we already have a number of interesting questions sent in by the people in the audience. It ought to be fun to have get some answers to it.
Can you give me an example? What is most foremost on people's minds?
Well, on an apolitical front, they say if you were serious about fixing Illinois, why did you leave pension reform? You can open up the Constitution. Anyhow, why did you leave pension reform off of it?
Yeah.
And does that mean this is just a carte blanche to raise taxes on everybody and keep spending?
Yeah, I think that's a fair concern. I don't think that's a political statement. That is a true statement about how a lot of people feel. They're worried about that. So if you're a proponent of that, you need to defend how this is not just opening the door wide and forever to unlimited taxes. Maybe that's right. I mean, that's some people's concern, isn't it?
Yeah, and well, it does seem that way. That why wouldn't they do it? I mean, on the other side, people are saying, why is it fair that people, the billionaires, don't pay their fair share? You know, that's an issue for the pro side. So it'll be an interesting discussion, I'm sure. I hope it's not just hackneyed and same old stuff. I'd like to get to some meat of the issue and hopefully drag some more information out on this to help people decide.
You know, a question Senator Resnick could answer for me is, because I saw that this tax would generate $3.5 billion. Well, what's the difference between the amount of money the state would get with this graduated rate versus how much do we get now? Right now, you tax everybody in the state 5%. If we set on dollars over $250,000, you'd pay 8%. But the other 97% are going to pay the same or a little bit less. How much are we going to net out on the positive? How much extra money does the state get with this, right? And I guess it would be an estimate. Some people might leave. Some people's incomes fluctuate. And it's not guaranteed what the rates will be. But I think if they want to sell us on the idea, then make sure it's worth it. How much are we going to get? Write that down. Ed, I need an answer to that. I need it by 4:30 tomorrow.
Okay. We're not doing it till Wednesday, so I can't get the answer until Wednesday at noon when you'll be on the air. So.
Well, you know, maybe we should have a conversation like this then Thursday or Friday. If I go to lincolnforum.org, I can find out more about it. Is this virtual, or are people going to be able to physically attend this?
This is going to be a virtual event.
Okay.
Well, the Union League Club, the Lincoln Forum, and Wind Trust. So we expect to have a fairly large crowd listening in. So
I think you will. Okay, so if I wanted to just dial in and watch it, this is going to be, again, it's going to be Thursday or Wednesday? Wednesday or Thursday?
Wednesday.
Wednesday, October 14th, noon to 1. And I go to, what's the website that I need to go to?
Lincolnforum.org.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then let's check in late in the week, and maybe you could give us a summary of what the hot buttons were, what the things are that we learned, and what are the sticking points for some people.
Sure. I'd be happy to do that. That's it's going to be very interesting, I think, and hopefully we can keep the fisticuffs to a minimum and
yeah,
get some real answers.
Ed Wehmer, Wintrust CEO and founder. Nice to talk to you, Ed. We'll visit again, okay?
Thanks, John. Be well.
Yep, that's the idea. Catherine Davis joins us. You frequently hear her on this show. Catherine is an associate editor at Chicago Inno. Visit ChicagoInno.com. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm looking at the 2020 Inno on Fire, which is a list of people that we should know about and even celebrate in the area. Tell me a little bit about this list.
Yeah, so the Inno on Fire list is a list of companies and people that we put out every year. And the idea is really to, you know, honor these people for having what we call a banner year. So generally in the tech world, that means, you know, growing your startup substantially, raising venture capital, going public on the stock market, these kinds of big milestones that point to success at the company. You know, this year, the list feels especially special because of COVID-19 and all the challenges that the business community has weathered this year. And so, you know, to be on this list and be recognized, I think, you know, means just a little bit more despite everything we've been through.
Are there some categories that seem to have more action than others?
Yeah, you know, our B2B category is generally the biggest one every year just because Chicago really is a B2B tech town as opposed to being a consumer-focused startup town or, you know, even food or healthcare. Those categories certainly have stars in them, but B2B tends to be the biggest. So, you know, one example is Sprout Social. They're a tech company here that makes a social media management platform. They sell that to other businesses, and we recognize them this year because they began trading on the stock market and have just seen their value grow since going public earlier this year.
I was imagining, though, you were going to say food, because food delivery, food service, while restaurants and bars have suffered greatly, it seems like there have been some really innovative ideas popping up in that space as well.
Yeah, you know, one that comes to mind is Farmer's Fridge. I'm sure we've talked about them on the phone before, but they're a local company that has essentially healthy vending machines. So they're vending machine-like devices that have salads in them and smoothies and, you know, kind of a step up from the Snickers and the Reese's you find in the average vending machine. And, you know, one reason that they were growing this year is because they shifted their focus to hospitals. So they were putting machines in hundreds of facilities, you know, really targeting the essential healthcare workers that needed access to healthy meals.
We visited with the people from Chow Bus, which is delivering the food from the Asian market in the Chicago area to consumers. Grubhub is on your list, $7.3 billion all-stock deal, the Chicago-based food delivery company. Nature's Find, we mentioned Farmer's Fridge. You probably could have done 50 in that space alone.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's really interesting to kind of see the food scene here in Chicago, but, I mean, we are home to to McDonald's and, you know, a lot of other successful food companies. So I think there's kind of that infrastructure here to allow food startups to thrive.
Healthcare is in there as well. And now you've got companies like Abbott Labs ID Now. Abbott Labs is huge. It's not like one of these little, oh, who are they, what do they do startups. I guess you can have big and small companies on here, huh?
I mean, you know, the thing is, with a company like Abbott, we actually normally wouldn't include them on this list, but because they, you know, had such an innovative approach to their COVID-19 test, we felt like they had to be on this list. You know, even if it's a huge sort of corporate conglomerate, like, if they are doing something innovative and solving a problem, and, you know, and coronavirus is the biggest kind of problem we're facing at this point, it belongs on the list and deserves to be recognized.
I'll just read what you all wrote. The device called ID Now weighs 6.6 pounds. It's roughly the size of a small toaster. The portable device has been used in urgent care clinics, hospital emergency departments, physicians' offices. Abbott has now shipped ID Now tests to all 50 states. There's another group that you have here called Lifestyles. We visited with the Forge in the Lamont Quarries area, the sort of outdoor recreation exercise space. Who else in the Lifestyles category made your list?
Yeah, so Talk is one. They also kind of, pivot on that food line. But, you know, Talk, if you know, they're the online reservation platform for restaurants, but different from OpenTable. They make you kind of put down a deposit for holding a reservation at a restaurant. But this year they raised $10 million. They've been growing a lot, especially as the restaurant industry has suffered through the pandemic. Talk has tried to be, you know, this platform to, you know, make sure restaurants aren't losing money on no-show reservations and, you know, that they're really being as efficient as they can be.
What's a story from this list, Catherine, that you especially like, one of these companies that did something unique or inspiring or is just surprising? But tell me a story you like on the list.
Yeah, so this is actually a person as opposed to a company, but her name is Samara Hernandez, and she's the founding partner of Chingona Ventures. And she founded this venture firm earlier this year to invest in early-stage startups that are traditionally neglected and overlooked by more established and corporate VCs. You know, she's invested in 11 companies so far this year, some of them in Chicago. But, you know, she's really focusing on women-founded companies, companies founded by minorities, and, you know, industries that are overlooked, so like child care and maternal care, and, you know, just sort of these companies that you wouldn't normally think to invest in, but she's found them and done the due diligence and has, you know, proved that they're worthy investment.
Not all is lost. Here are 50 companies on fire, the 2020 Inno on Fire list. Catherine Davis is the associate editor there. It's interesting reading. Nice to talk to you again, Catherine, as always. Good work on that.
Thanks.
That's at ChicagoInno.com. Steve Grzanich in the WGN Radio Newsroom has more business news.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Private equity firm Blackstone Group is leasing 52,000 square feet at Chicago's Willis Tower to New York-based Industrious, a provider of shared office space. The deal means the building is now about 95% leased. Crane says Industrious will join a Willis Tower tenant list that already includes flexible office provider Convene, one of its rivals. Industrious will now have 9 locations in the Chicago area, totaling 350,000 square feet. Abbott Labs has received FDA emergency use authorization for its COVID-19 IgM antibody blood test. It's Abbott's latest test in the fight against COVID-19. Since the start of the pandemic, Abbott has received emergency use authorization for 7 tests, including molecular tests, a rapid antigen test, and an IgG antibody test. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Amy Gluck joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's talk about what's going on with Southwest and O'Hare, Amy.
Yeah, this is a really interesting thing. So Southwest is going to be flying to O'Hare. I mean, we think of Southwest, we think of Midway Airport. It's been that way since 1985. Southwest has never flown to O'Hare, but here we are. They're going to start adding routes. No word yet on exactly where they're adding flights, what destinations, you know, they're adding. But Chicago and Houston, they're investing. So both cities, Chicago and Houston, have 2 airports. And they've announced today that they're going to be flying from both airports in both cities. That is, you know, that is a pretty big deal when we think of, because, you know, O'Hare is all about United and American and international flights, really. And I think a lot of people really associate Southwest with Midway. They're still going to keep their service as is at Midway. They're calling this, in addition to, they were very clear about that in their statement, but they'll be adding some routes. That's supposed to happen in early 2021. We don't have exact dates yet, but I think that's going to be really interesting. Probably going to add to those TSA lines, I imagine, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see what those destinations are that they're adding. My bet is that they're going to kind of probably do some of those kind of bread and butter, tried and true destinations that people use a lot, that are reliably full, things like that. But we shall see.
Wonder if Midway likes this. I mean, I wonder if people, I don't know, I prefer to fly in and out of Midway if I can. But if it's more convenient for people for some reason to go to or connect through O'Hare via Southwest, I wonder if that's going to hurt the other airport.
Yeah, I wonder that too. I think everybody kind of has their airport allegiance, and it probably has to do with how quickly you can get there when you're running late for a flight. I think that's probably what a lot of people have picked their preferred airport on. So I think it'd be interesting, certainly for the loyalty programs, right? When we think of, oh, well, I really need to fly out of O'Hare, so I better go with this other airline, even though I'm a Southwest member. Like, that might really change that conversation. It might convert some people who are loyal to airlines that fly out of O'Hare to Southwest. You know, they tend to go on very competitive pricing and, you know, keep their prices off of the, you know, price line and orbits and things like that, wanting people to book direct, saying, hey, we offer the best deal. So I think that's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out and what that does to O'Hare. And yeah, as you say, how Midway feels about that.
Talk to me about what's going on with Willis Tower now.
Okay, so, you know, we've had some conversation about office towers, or office space rather, and kind of the future of it is so unknown, because we're unsure what people are going to have the appetite for, and some businesses have already been having some conversations, not necessarily about really concrete stuff, but more theoretical plans of what kind of office space do we really need, what's it going to look like. Some subleases have already come under contract, or have already been up for grabs, but nonetheless, Willis Tower and Industrious, which is a very big co-working firm on par with WeWork and things like that, WeWork tends to get a lot of conversation because it's had, you know, it's been in some headlines over the last couple of years. But Industrious is another, and they have signed this lease, or signed this partnership agreement to be in Willis Tower. And that is kind of the difference between them and WeWork, whereas a lot of co-working firms just straight up sign a lease, that's it, we're a tenant. Industrious kind of worked a partnership with the building that is about a little more of a revenue share for that building. So that's attractive to someone trying to fill that space. So with this announcement, that makes Willis Tower about 95% leased, as they're trying to renovate stuff and add a lot of amenities for their tenants. But it's a big bet. You know, we have to wait and see. Are people really keen to be in a you know, be in a high rise right now, be in elevators. You know, one issue that surfaced with when we talk about co-working is if you're working around the same people every day, you kind of get to know my coworkers' feelings and standards about coming into work sick or things like that, and what my expectation is as their boss or colleague, things like that, what the company's expectations are. This is a little different in co-working because you don't necessarily know the standards of the people working around you in a given day. You may not even know the people working around you in a given day. So I think it's a very big bet, but it will be really, really interesting. Their timeline is tracking into early next year to get that space in there and up and running. But another one, we kind of have to wait and see if this bet pays off for Willis Tower. That's part of their renovation and part of keeping them so well occupied.
Well, I was about to say I'm very encouraged to hear 95% occupancy, but I guess that doesn't mean 95% revenue if this leased space doesn't generate clients, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So they could put this big space in there, and they have 9 in the city. But, you know, they could put the space, you know, it's like Field of Dreams, right? They build it and they will come. Well, not necessarily, right? They may not. We have to kind of wait and see. There's some analysts that are saying, like, well, I feel like once we get through this, things will go back to what people felt was normal before. And there's some analysts saying, this might have changed work forever. This might have changed. A lot of offices have realized it's more efficient for people to work remotely. So we have to wait and see exactly how co-working space works out and how it fills needs in the future. But the other side of that is that some companies that are downsizing saying, hey, we probably don't need a huge building anymore. We really only need a floor of desk. They could, you know, some companies could bring their business there. We think of co-working a lot of times with like entrepreneurs and startups, but sometimes companies are based there when you only need a few desks or only need a smaller space instead of, you know, several floors.
Yeah.
So it might be that companies downsize into that. Again, a wait and see.
Take the train in from the suburbs. It's a short walk from Union Station. We have 1 minute left. Talk to me about what's most interesting to you on the Apple front with the new phone coming out.
Well, it used to be that they were really, really tight-lipped, but in recent years, these Apple events have gotten a little bit less leak-proof, so we do know a little bit about what we can expect tomorrow. And what's being reported is that we expect to see 4 new iPhones, a smaller one, the 4 total. One's a little bit bigger, one's a little bit smaller, 2 are right there in the middle, kind of that larger phone size now. But it's really being touted as kind of this one of the biggest, most significant iPhone events in recent years, because it puts people on an upcycle, kind of puts them in the cycle of upgrading their devices, which Apple did a few years ago when it introduced the 2 sizes of iPhones, and that set up their revenue and made them very valuable for several years. So it's going to be interesting to see if that does the same and kind of sets off this revenue-generating cycle for consumers for a couple of years. But the big thing is going to be about 5G. So it's unclear if all the phones will have 5G capabilities or just some of them. Some customers may be disappointed because in some areas that 5G infrastructure is not quite there yet, but that's the goal of having these, you know, phones that are 5G enabled. But, you know, they did the Apple Watch event in September. Usually the big, big blowout thing is September and things start shipping in October. With supply and demand a little interrupted by COVID right now, to say the least, they've done this differently. So they did a watch thing in September and they're doing this event now about the phones. They really put a lot of fanfare around it. So I think a lot of eyes will be on that Apple event tomorrow.
Amy Guth, reporting on a bunch of different topics. We'll visit again. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.